What do you do in the Oregon Trail? Anyone? What happens in the Oregon Trail?
We have like a wagon that gets.
You have a wagon that gets across the country, right? And what are you doing as you try to get the wagon across the country? You look after the welfare of the people. You teach them skills. You do a lot of things. Now, how long ago did you play the Oregon Trail?
Quite recently.
All right. So you were not the right person to ask this question.
30 years ago.
So that's usually the answer that I get. 20 years ago, 30 years ago. What's amazing is when I ask that question, how many people still remember 20 years later what happens in the Oregon Trail? When you think about the 10 lectures before the Oregon Trail and the 10 lectures after the Oregon Trail, and how much you remember of those lectures, you quickly get the point of why I think simulations are one amazing way to improve the state of education, not just in the K-12 space, but also in the corporate space. So I'm excited to talk about that here today for the next hour. And we're going to. My name is Bjorn Billhart, and I'm the CEO of a company called Inspire Learning. We are about 50 simulation designers, game developers, technologists. Our offices are two blocks from here on 17th and Guadalupe. So as you walk back towards the Convention Center, you'll walk by our three-story building on Guadalupe on the right side. We've been in business for 10 years, started out of Harvard Business School, and created some simulations that are still being used in the school up there, and then expanded into many other areas from corporate education to collegiate education as well as K-12. And what I'll be talking about today is the promise of simulation learning, and then I want to delve into how simulations work, because there are, I think, a lot of misperceptions as to what simulations can and cannot do. And if this hour can help clarify some of these misperceptions and help create better simulations that actually work, then I will have done my job. So let's start with the promise of simulation learning. And before we kind of go into the future, I want to take you on to a very quick history of simulation-based learning over the last 10 years. Because the last 10 years have really actually been a little bit of a sad story in terms of what we have accomplished as an industry in creating simulations that really work in the learning field. And I think and this is my view on how things developed. I think in part what it was to blame is that in the early days of the internet, learning professionals got extremely excited about the scalability of learning. And so computer-based training, e-learning, and web page after web page was put up online. And it took about 10 years to really figure out in the Web 2.0 days that you need to make these courses more interactive. You need to actually create some games. You need to create some way to engage an audience online. We're just now at the point where I think we can talk about some really interesting applications for how to use the internet and how to use interactivity in a social manner, where it's not just about you interacting with a computer, but you interacting with other people online. Obviously, the technology wasn't there 10 years ago, but I think actually more important than the technology is that people didn't really understand for the longest time what power there is in an online interactive environment. And the close analogy I have is, when the film first came out, film camera first came out about 100 years ago, it took people about 10 years. The first 10 years of film was basically someone just filming a theater classroom from the back of the room and thought, we have this great new medium. We'll just put it all, out there for everyone to see. And all of a sudden, we had these great plays, online, or in that case, on film reels, and you could transport it across the Oregon Trail, I guess. But it took 10, 15 years for filmmakers to understand that this was a new medium that they can use in many different ways. And I think we're just now at that stage where simulations really are using the online medium in new and different ways. And so that's where I think we're in a very exciting part of the evolution of the web and the evolution of education. So what's wrong with this picture? The wheels are turned the wrong way. Here is a really interesting fact. This is not a Photoshopped image. This is an actual image of a JetBlue airplane landing in the LAX airport. This happened. How many of you remember this incident? Some of you do. This happened about 4 or 5 years ago. Now, the really scary thing about this particular incident was some of you that have flown JetBlue know that there's free live TV on the plane. At some point, this plane was trying to land, and the pilot discovered that there was a problem. CNN somehow became wind of it and started to film the airplane as it was circling above LAX. So all the passengers inside were watching themselves on CNN, you know, on the camera breaking news. So it must not have been a fun experience. What happened, though, and this is interesting, So story ends really well. Pilot made a pitch-perfect landing with the wheel exactly extended like this, landed on the runway. No passengers even got hurt. Everyone evacuated safely. And CNN or a film crew asked the pilot afterwards, how in the world did you make this happen? Pilot said, oh, this wasn't the first time I landed a plane like this. I did this about 5 times in the last few years in the simulator. So this was a routine, engine equipment failure. And, you know, I had all the experience in the world that I needed to land this plane. So it was no big deal to the pilot. So when you think about where lives are at stake, pilot training, when you think about what soldiers do on a day-to-day basis, simulations are the largest component of training for professions where it truly matters. Medical simulations are the largest component of medical education. It's real practice that is required when you're operating on people or when you're flying a plane. So why aren't simulations used more often in the more regular classroom environment? And we're going to explore some of those things in our second part of the presentation in terms of how simulations work. And we're going to show you some failures as well, because I think a large part of why simulations haven't been used more prevalently in the classroom is that there are some really bad ones out there. It takes a while to figure out how to do them right. Let me give you a few examples of what I'm actually talking about so you have just a little bit of context of what's out there. And these are current simulations that we've been tangentially involved with, but some really cool applications of how simulations are changing the classroom today. And then we'll go into some of the things that don't work. But one really great example of a simulation that has taken off is an application called Finance Park. How many of you are familiar with Junior Achievements? Junior Achievement. How many of you are familiar with Finance Park? Just out of curiosity. So this is an online simulation that is used in the high school area to give kids an understanding of what it means to be an adult. So very similar to SimCity, or The Sims, actually, you manage your adult life in this environment. But unlike The Sims, this simulation in particular has a unique educational focus. And so here, you are getting a persona online, randomly assigned. And in that persona, you get a salary, and you get placed in this virtual world with your classmates and with your peers. Some teachers do it in the classroom. Others do it as homework. And students actually can sign up online as well. So you don't have to actually be part of the class to play. But you get assigned this persona, and you have to walk around this virtual city. And you get to see your peers, your real peers, who are also virtual characters, with different salary levels and with different lifestyle preferences. And as you walk through this finance park, you are quickly coming to the realization that your neighbor may have a slightly higher salary than you. So as they drive into their parkway with a brand new car and you go shopping for the same car, and this car salesman tries to sell you the same car, you're all of a sudden finding yourself in a financial position that's more precarious than you would have liked. And so students here really go through this experience of how to budget for their life. They have to interact with all these virtual characters that all try to sell them something, and they have to calculate. They have their virtual credit card, and they swipe it, and they run up the credit card debt just like us real adults. But the real interesting thing about this particular simulation is that you are playing not by yourself, but you're playing with your peers. You're playing with neighbors, and you're seeing them in action. There's a chat functionality, so you can chat with them. And you get to see how different starting salaries for whatever persona you have will lead to different lifestyle choices that you can make. So real rich educational environment, and obviously a lot of fun for the kids. Let me show you another example real quick. And actually, we do have a little bit of time, so let me just kind of very quickly go through. This is the Finance Park application. You have instructions here. You have the life situation. So you can see here who you are, the job title, your age, and you have, of course, your financial information. And then you are calculating your financial portfolio here as you walk through the town and as you make your choices inside of the simulation. So just one example of how simulations are used in the K-12 environment today that really, in my mind, are creating new opportunities for students to explore the world using the interactive characters that they're dealing with. The second simulation is something called Management Challenge. And in this simulation, you are a new manager. So many Generation X people, very successful in their jobs, 26, 27 years old, all of a sudden get promoted, all of a sudden have a team, whether it's a formal team or whether it's a team that gets assigned to them for a project. They have to all of a sudden deal with people that are very different from themselves. And so here you have these characters, these virtual characters that you have to manage. And they all have different functional skills and interpersonal skills, and then you have to complete projects using these characters. Now, here's an interesting quagmire or question that the simulation raises. Can you really learn interpersonal skills by clicking on the computer and by clicking on characters that are online where you see a description of them? Is that a good way to train a manager? Over the last 10 years, and I'll tell you kind of some of the failures of what we've experienced, we tried that. We tried to create these characters and basically give people examples of, here's a, 60-year-old, kind of very accomplished worker, and you have to manage them. What do you do, based on the demographic history and their work performance over time? Make a choice, select one, A, B, C. It's good, and it helps managers kind of categorize, how to think about management challenges, but it's not real-life simulation-based content, right? You make a conscious decision to pick A, B, C. You're not actually interacting with that person. So what we came up with and decided that, this type of simulation where it's all about interpersonal skills requires something different, requires some interpersonal communication, interaction. And we realized, you probably need to have a conversation partner on the other end in order for a simulation like that for managers to be really meaningful. So we played around with some ideas on kind of how we could make that work. And I'm actually going to ask for a volunteer in a few seconds and to come down, and we're going to play through a little scenario here, because to understand how a simulation like this can work, and this is an online simulation, I'm pulling this up on a PDF because it's actually an iPad simulation, so you play this either on the iPad in the classroom, or you can play this online. But basically what happens in this particular simulation, you drag these employees from these are your employees here. You drag them onto the project cards, and that's fun, but that's not really educational. But what happens is, as you complete your projects and as you see kind of how you may have assigned these employees to the right or the wrong type of projects, you have little notices that come up, and you have problems that you have to deal with. And here, you now all of a sudden are entering a video role play with these employees. And unlike a simulation where you basically just see the video of the person and you have to select, what you'd like to do, you actually have to talk to this person in real time. And because the simulation is not artificial intelligence, Siri notwithstanding, is not quite there yet in terms of understanding exactly the meaning of your words, what we decided what we needed to do was to actually have a real conversation partner on the other end that has their version of the simulation where they interpret what you're saying. And they are basically guiding a branching conversation as part of this simulation effort. So let's try this. I want to actually show you a little bit of how this looks like. And it's not very integrated here, but this is kind of just a glimpse of the future. So there are a few potential situations that that you face as you go through one of these scenarios. And one is Mary. I'm going to ask for a volunteer in a second, so think about whether you want to volunteer on responding to Mary. Mary is in the middle of a very important project that will either make your team win or lose in this particular quarter that you're playing. She has a family situation, an aunt that has gotten sick. It's not an immediate family member, so it is not covered under Family Medical Leave Act. It's really up to your discretion in terms of what you want to do. Mary's asking for 10 vacation days, which will significantly delay the release of the project. You have the option of giving her all 10 days paid. She can't afford for you, unfortunately, to have an unpaid leave, so you give her 10 days paid. You can give her 5 days and have her work at home for the other 5 days, or you can deny her request because this is just the most important project. Now, you don't have all the background information on Mary, but just to give you a quick glimpse on how this whole system works, can I get a volunteer to play with Mary? Any brave souls? All right, over there. You can come down or stay up there. Come on down if you want. Yeah, we got a little bit of time. So, are you going to grant Mary all 10 vacation days, or are you going to? You can go here. Go to the microphone. Just here and speak to Mary in a second. Are you going to grant her 10 vacation days, 5 vacation days, or no vacation days at all?
5
vacation days, which means you do not grant Mary all of her requested vacation days. And here's what she says.
I've been frustrated, as you can imagine. I really needed to be with my family during this difficult time. Can you explain to me why I didn't receive the personal days I asked for?
And now you have to respond. Now, what I have here, I'm the other player, right? So I have my iPad here, and on the iPad, I have the choices that I hear you say, right? So there are about 15 different things you could potentially go down, 15 different routes you could go down. Based on your route, I'm going to branch the simulation here.
All right. As a employee of our organization, I feel that morale is important, but also the project that you're working on. So to meet you halfway, we will let you go spend time with your family, but also we have a project that gets done, that needs to get done.
All right. Okay. And that particular choice now, and again, I'm hacking the system here. You imagine there's another player now on the other side, basically submitting the choice. And now the simulation branches into the next
area. I hear what you're saying, but I also know that this company values its employees, doesn't it? We make exceptions all of the time to help each other out. You know what I'm going through. Why doesn't my situation merit more flexibility from the company?
You're the manager.
Why doesn't it merit more? Good God. Don't look at my company, by the way. why doesn't your situation merit more? You are on equal playing field as all other members of my team. Each person has their own unique circumstances when they come into the job, and I look at yours and I balance it against your performance and who you are and your ability to do the job, and this is what I feel is the best interest for the team on a whole and for your career and for you.
All right, congratulations, everyone. Give Nicholas a round of applause. There are about two or three more branches in here. Depending on where he goes, there are of course a lot of pitfalls that you can fall into as a manager when you're answering this question, right? And in fact, actually, if you do grant her all 10 vacation days, you're not off the hook, because what happens when you give an employee that much vacation day paid? All of a sudden, you're creating a scenario where everyone else perceives you as giving favorites, right? So what happens when you give Mary all the vacation days? She comes back after you, and she said, you know, I got another problem. I'm really having a hard time with my colleagues now. You know, what should I do? Then you have to figure out, well, how do I address that problem, right? So you actually, you know, great job. I picked the middle route, and you defended it well. So congratulations on that. But the promise here is, and hopefully this came through, the promise here is that it's not a single-player simulation. It's a multiplayer simulation, and you have a real person on the other end. And you do this through web conferencing. So you do this actually. Yeah, go ahead.
Just to make one comment.
Yeah.
I felt the pressure.
Right?
In a room with the pressure of a person really challenging my managerial experience.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really going to get unless you're in a simulation.
Exactly. Yeah, so the benefit here is, right, I mean, role plays have existed in management training forever and ever, right? But all of you guys have been through these boring types of, all of you have been through management training, right? You do these role plays, and it's a little bit awkward, and you have this other person, like, trying to pretend, right, and they're not a good actor, and, you know, half of them are funny, and the other half are just kind of like, okay, I get it, it's good, a point. This thing puts you in a real, the other thing, of course, that happens is, whatever you do affects the simulation, right? So you're not playing just by yourself. You're playing against other teams. And so you're in the simulation here where, you know, if you don't complete this project, well, your team actually is going to lose. So, you know, you have some real-world consequences in terms of winning or losing in the simulation in terms of how you interacted with this employee. So actually, before I move forward, any questions or comments on these two examples, one from the K-12 area and one from this area? Yeah. Yeah, and we've learned a ton of lessons. So let's go to all the things that don't work, because I want this to be an interactive session. Thank you for that question, and as many of those types of questions as you want, we'll discuss here. A lot of things don't work online. We tried. So in a classroom, training day is usually 9 to 5. You know, you block off the day, you go into the training class, and, you know, if you have something like this, like a simulation in the classroom, it's a lot of fun, engaging. If you have a lecture for the full day, it tends to be a little bit more boring. But you're there for the full day. You're not leaving most of the time, unless it's truly boring. Online, you have a much bigger challenge. We've tried every single constellation under the sun in terms of how to make the online environment work. And I think we found a few good ones. So first of all, what doesn't work? Full-day events don't work online, in my mind. At least not training events where literally people have spent the full day away. The other thing that doesn't work is spacing it out in 1 week, week two, week three, week four. People lose interest after 1 week, especially if you do a simulation like this. But even just regular content, if you do it over more than, you know, 2-3 weeks, it's just it becomes more draining. Unless it's a degree experience where you're really kind of committing yourself to a longer journey. But if you have a, you know, kind of training event on new management skills, on business acumen skills, you want to keep it within a week. So what we found is a sweet spot of roughly 2 to 3 hours each day. For roughly 2 to 3 days within 1 week. And people, you make people just like webinars or just like, you know, management meetings. You basically make people clear their calendar, you know, commit to those times. The other thing we found is afternoons were far less than mornings, right? Mornings, you do 9 to 11 a.m., usually not much interruptions. And people then have the rest of the day to catch up on email. So from a timing perspective, it's a lot more tricky. And then we found, you know, either Monday through Thursday or, you know, Tuesday through Friday, 4 days max, and you can get a lot of really good content in. So we do something like this and we play, for an hour each day, and then we do an hour of management lessons. You know, what do you do? How do you react in a particular situation? You know, how do you solve a problem like Mary's? And so you do an hour of play and an hour of discussion each day. But I would actually be curious, anyone have contrary opinions or ways that they have found it to work or not work online? No. It's a tricky question. But here's the deal. And here's kind of where simulations are also really useful. Online webinars are really hard if they're longer than even 60 minutes. There's a reason why TED's so popular. It's like 20 minutes, right? Done, right? Anyone talking for more than 20 minutes to you online is really hard to make happen. So What this simulation does, though, is it allows people into breakout rooms and it allows people to play versus being talked to. And that's what makes the difference when you do an online program. So we actually run programs around the world. Unilever is one of our big clients. And literally, you know, people from Russia competing with people from Brazil, sometimes asynchronously even. You know, so one team completes their tasks in the morning their time, and then the other team, as time zones roll around, completes it the other day. And then Russia logs in the next morning and finds, Brazil beat us, right? And so there's actually, for large global companies, there's a real value in connecting employees this way, right? Because you get to know your teammates and you get to know your competitors really well in a discussion like this, far better than in a lecture where you just lecture to. Make sense? Any other questions, comments, concerns? Yeah. Ah, great question. So now going into the technical details, I'm happy to talk as much as you want afterwards as well. But real quick, this is about this goes about two more in depth. We tried longer; it becomes too unwieldy, and it also duplicates. So you saw that there were three choices, but two of them actually led to the same. So if you don't grant many all 10 days, you feel like you have two choices, but they're really leading to the same branching conversation. So the total number of videos per role play is roughly 30 to 40. And so that gives you enough richness and complexity to really capture everything. And then, of course, you always have that off the wall question, right? Where the other person's like, I have no, that's not in the playbook here. And so you have to have some fail safes, right? It's like, I don't understand what you just said. And it's like, rephrase your question or talk about something else, right? And that's an answer that Mary gives you. Yeah. It depends. I mean, so in a K through 12, I will say nothing should be custom ever. I mean, K through 12, you're going to, my company is more in the corporate space, but if I were to design a K through 12 simulation, I would go for the blockbuster, as aligned to the state standards. In the corporate side, it's different because every company thinks they're different. And so in the corporate side, you got some. How many of you are on the corporate side? Okay, so quite a few. One of the things that we found that it actually works really well is if we separated the role plays from the simulation dynamics. So the simulation dynamics are very generic, and you can type in a new project up there, but it doesn't really matter. It's just points, right? So it's just the kind of gamification of things. The role plays is where everyone wants to have their own type of scenario and their own type of situation. But if you separate it, you don't have to recode the whole simulation. You recode the role play. Make sense? Yeah. Lots and lots of prototypes and playtests, and you just run it through people, and you'll never get to all of the potential responses. But there are actually some really good tips and tricks that you can do in terms of, intentions that you can discern. And if you give people specific instructions up front, also in terms of what the situation is about and what the likely potential outcomes are, then you guide people subtly into role playing in a certain way so that they don't go off completely off track. But that's a hard part, of course.
How do you deal with time differences when you are dealing in different countries? And at the same time, how do you manage the different languages? How do you deal with that?
That's a great, great question. Different languages, different time zones. So we actually. And again, there are many different ways you can handle all this, and I'd love to listen. I'd love to listen to ideas that you guys have on this. But we found that you do need to locate the teams in the same time zone, at least, not the same country. So, but each team in this particular simulation is only three people. So you can have a three-person team in Russia, you can have or adjacent, right? And you have a three-person team in Brazil, which is completely different time zone, and you just roll things over. Now, the thing is, your facilitator costs will still increase, right? Because your facilitator has to be there, for the different teams in the different time zones. So oftentimes, as a practical matter, we found large Fortune 500 companies to deploy simulation cyclists usually with one time zone in mind. So that's just practically there. But you can, and simulation should be designed so that you can deploy it across multiple time zones. So it's not one person's decision doesn't necessarily need, you need to wait for your competitor's decisions. One more question. All right, let's actually move on, because I want to get to... So let me just real quick go through the case for simulation-based learning. Of course, this goes for both management training and for K-12. The next generation of learners need to be engaged, and many of you that are here at South by Southwest probably agree with this idea that the system, our educational system, is broken, and there are far too many lecture-based classrooms in this world still, and they need to be replaced with more action-driven projects, team-based projects. When you think about how we're going to compete in the next decade, in the world, we need people that are problem solvers. You're not getting problem solvers by having them memorize facts or listen. You're getting problem solvers by letting them practice. So in engaging that next generation is important. One of the really great benefits and why there's such a great case for simulation-based learning is that it's both scalable and effective. E-learning is scalable, but it's highly ineffective. I can ask around the room how many of you have gone through a boring e-learning class. But e-learning is not effective. And many companies are discovering, you do e-learning for compliance because you need to check a mark. But if you really want people to learn, it's really hard to do that all by yourself in your room. And then the problem is, of course, the classroom is not scalable. And so simulations solve that problem. And that makes training far more consistently valuable. A classroom training is always heavily, heavily dependent on the facilitator. So you could have the greatest curriculum, and it's delivered by a passionate, really articulate facilitator, and everyone gives it high credits. Then you roll it out worldwide, and you go to Mexico or Brazil, and you get a facilitator that doesn't understand the concepts as well or isn't as eloquent, and you're wasting a lot of people's time. This type of simulation-based learning makes training in the corporate space far more consistently valuable. So that's the case for simulation-based learning. We're halfway through the hour. The next half hour, I want to actually talk about how simulations work, because I think the reason why simulations are not more widespread in both K-12 and corporate education is not just because people haven't figured out that simulations are a cool idea. I think 10 years ago when I started my business, everyone was like, oh yeah, this is great, learn by doing. Of course, everyone should do it. A large part is because many of the simulation efforts over the last 10 years have failed. And I think it's because people don't really fully understand what simulations actually are and what they do well and what they don't do well. So we'll talk about that. Before we get started, a fun question. Are simulations games? Sometimes. Great answer. Who wants to kind of take a stab at it? Anyone feel strongly that simulations are games are completely separate or that they're exactly the same, yeah? And that's exactly the main difference. And that doesn't mean that simulations aren't games. And many simulations can be games, but they have specific areas that they focus on. So games are about competition and winning. Games allow players to level up. And a lot of times you hear this word gamification quite a bit these days, right? The gamification of everything, right? Just you level up and you get badges, right? And you get badges of honor. That's extrinsic motivation, right? You get a badge, and you eat your spinach, and after you eat your spinach, you get the salad, or you get the dessert of, an honorary badge. That's how games function. Simulations are a lot more about illustrating relationships and creating insights, and there the focus is on intrinsic motivation. Now, most of the simulations that I've ever been a part of are also games. They have both. Because you want the competitive aspect for these simulations. You want people to feel like there is a win state and that you're competing against someone else and see how you stack up. So most simulations should be games. But it's important, I think, to recognize that there's a difference. Second fact about simulation, myths about simulations. And please feel free to add to these. But over the last 10 years, many people got very excited about simulations. Said, all the simulations need to be in Second Life, and they need to be 3D, and they need to be really immersive and first-person shooter, and that's how you simulate the real world. In my mind, simulations are not about 3D and immersive, you know, first-person shooter environments. They can be, if that's part of what you're trying to teach. They absolutely should be if you're trying to teach, you know, how to, you know, in the military, there's this great 3D simulation about, you know, how to man a checkpoint, you know, in Afghanistan. Well, you know, if what you're looking for are visual clues in terms of a car approaching a checkpoint, you probably want to make this as realistic as possible, and you want to make it 3D, and you want to make it realistic. But if you're teaching strategy for management, you do not need the 3D environment. And so they also don't need to be nearly as expensive. They also, and this is another thing that I'm big on, they also don't need to mimic all aspects of reality. They need to mimic the aspects that really matter. And I'll give you the great example. I'm a flight simulator fan. You know, there are these really expensive flight simulators, $20 million at Southwest Airlines, which is amazing. I went one of those. You cannot distinguish them from a real plane. More little known is the fact that many pilots get trained on a much more simpler simulator first, which is the crosswind simulator, which just simulates the back and forth wind. It's basically, it looks like a little rowboat, and it's just simulating a landing and crosswind, which is one of the hardest things a pilot needs to do. In order to learn crosswind landing, you do not need all these other factors involved. You need to first practice on the crosswind simulator. And similarly, when you're learning how to connect strategic choices to financial business decisions, you don't necessarily, there are a lot of extraneous simulation choices that are present in the real world, but as simulation designers, we need to extract from reality to bring home some of the learning points. So a lot of times when we get pulled into a simulation, custom simulation work from clients, you know, the people are really excited about simulation, and the first thing they do is bombard us with every single thing that they want simulated in the real world, and try to create mimic reality as close as possible. I think that's a mistake. You need to really figure out what are you modeling and why, and oftentimes simplifying from the real world makes a big difference. And then, of course, if you do all that, you don't need to necessarily have an expensive simulation. One of the better simulations I've seen, a competitor of ours created, I have to admit, and one-page piece of paper. Different roles, different instructions, but amazingly interactive. It kept the room engaged for 4 hours straight. One piece of paper for, I think, 5 participants. Little riddle that took 4 hours to solve. Brilliant. So, you know, simulations doesn't necessarily mean, you know, Second Life environment. So, I skipped ahead. I should have asked the question first. What is learning? When you think about simulations, and this kind of at the heart of what I want to talk about today, when you think of simulations, you think of these really cool environments, you think about, you know, they really start teaching something. But when you really think about what is learning, learning is not just about knowledge. Learning is about, since most of you have seen this, learning is also about insights and practice. And here's where people oftentimes create simulations that miss the mark. When you're trying to create a simulation that teaches you new facts and knowledge, you're very likely going to lose. Simulations are quite horrible at teaching you new knowledge, which is something that's fairly counterintuitive. But when you think about the amount of energy that it takes to start playing a simulation or game, the rules you have to learn about the game, if you're just teaching some facts, if all you're doing is teaching, you know, kind of, you know, behave in certain ways in a corporate, you know, environment, if you're teaching that as a fact, you do not need a simulation. And a lot of simulations were built around fact-based knowledge transfer learning. And when you do that, you lose the audience because you spend an hour or, you know, 30 minutes explaining a simulation. And at the end of the whole experience, people go, okay, so what am I supposed to get out of this? Well, here are the here are the 50 facts that you needed to get out of this. And it's like, well, why did I spend half an hour like trying to play the simulation? Couldn't you have just told me this? You know, why, you know, just give me an email on this and I'll learn it that way much better. Simulations though, and this is, I'd love your feedback on this and I'd love to make this a interactive discussion. Simulations are really good in my mind at creating opportunities for practice and giving people insights. So when you set up a simulation and you come with, and you think about, okay, what do I really want to teach here? If you want people to practice management behaviors like we just did here earlier today, that's what simulations are for. That's when they're good at. If you want them to get insights into that go above knowledge, so insights into relationships that go up. If, you know, if I spend X on R&D as a company, you know, and 5 years later I get this return, you know, what does that mean in the overall financial health of my company's behavior? If you want to gain insights and have people think about relationships and you know, codependencies, that's where simulations really shine. Now, there are some simulations that are really good at knowledge transfer, and in particular, I mean, there are. Of course, when you see a Rosetta Stone, there are these mini games. They're very good. Mnemonic exercises, mini games, very good in knowledge transfer. I won't call them necessarily simulations, actually. They're more like, you know, they're tools to learn. But oftentimes then people say, oh, well, it's just instead of this mnemonic exercise, right, this little fun game, let's make this a real simulation just to teach the knowledge fact. And I think that's Mrs. Mark. Of course, when you go into the practice area, flight simulators, medical device simulators, and these management role plays exercises that we've seen are become very valuable. And then on the insight side, business strategy simulations, organizational behavior simulations, lots of things that you can do to generate insights. That's really what simulations do. And then there's this whole other component that I feel is often neglected when you talk about learning. And that's, learning is not just about the knowledge transfer. It's not just even about practicing skill sets. It's about self-awareness. How good are you at something? It's about motivation. Do you really want to become a financial accountant? You know, do you really want to become a musician? Well, you know, try it out. See how it works. And, you know, do you really want to switch from marketing to sales? You know, simulations give you self-awareness. They give you motivation. And also they give you far better way to connect with people because they're social. And so it's beyond the learning objectives that you see the value of simulations being created in the marketplace. But again, a lot of people use it in the wrong way, focused just on the knowledge piece. Before I go into the case study here, any questions, concerns, arguments? Yeah.
What was the name of that one-page simulation?
I knew I was going to ask. It had something, and I really would tell you if I remembered. It's something to do with film, and it was a really smart setup in terms of creating. You had to figure out a commercial. You had to figure out a commercial as a team. And I don't know, the commercial something. I will find it for you. Give me your card. I hate to tease like that and then not have the answer.
That was a good setup.
But it was one of our. I'll give you the company name. You can look it up. Anyone else? Yeah. When you're talking about grammar, so the simulations for those on the podcast, simulations seem to work really well when you talk about practical matters. Do they work when you talk about grammar? You know, that's if you can solve that problem, and again, we're not in the K-12 space, but I know a lot of people that are trying to solve that problem. If you can solve that, I think you will have a killer app on your hands. I do think you can use simulations for things like grammar. And again, I think the question is, what are you trying to do? Mnemonic exercises and mini games, I think, are really good at certain parts of teaching grammar, but it's not a simulation, right? So the question is, can you do a simulation? One of the interesting things I've seen lately is, you know, how do you learn history? And the simulation was basically you have to tweet. Basically tweet the accounts of the, you know, Civil War or something, right? And so you like pretend you're back in the Civil War and you have the, you know, the different characters and everyone tweets, right? Like what's happening that day. I think it's a great way to learn about the Civil War and you know, other historical events. I don't know. I mean, I don't have an answer. I don't know if anyone here in the audience has, but I think it's possible. I think it'll happen. If someone will find a really smart way to teach grammar with a simulation like this, they'll make a lot of money. Let me go into case study, University of Texas. This is one of my favorite case studies in simulations. Actually, a simulation was developed here at UT by some university professors, and it's meant to teach students ethical decision-making. Which is one of the hardest things to teach to MBAs. and in particular, any attempt at a professor to teach a curriculum around ethics miserably fails. So why does it fail? Because not everyone has the same ethics. That is part of it. A big part of it is everyone knows actually what the right answers are. When you're in the classroom and you teach an ethics case, you have a bunch of do-gooders like you wouldn't believe in an MBA classroom. You're not really putting people in a position to make ethical choices. You're setting them up so that they know exactly what the right thing to do is, and they'll dutifully raise their hand and say, well, I would never do that as CEO. And 10 years later, they go out into the world and become under pressure and do exactly what they said they would never do. And so to teach ethics to MBA students was one of the challenges here. And the idea here was that in order to do that, you really can't have a simulation just about ethics. You have to have a leadership simulation, and you have to embed ethical lessons in leadership. And so here's what the university created. And we were part of this, in full disclosure. Teams formulated these strategies, and it had to execute them over multiple quarters. They had these debriefs for each team. But here's what happened. Every team member had an individual role, and every person had to have certain decisions that they made in their individual role, and then the leadership roles changed. So the CEO became reassigned as a frontline manager and vice versa, and so you know you were a CEO for two quarters, and then you became a frontline manager. In your role, you had an inbox with information that was instrumental in helping the company move forward. And in order to win in the simulation, you had to coordinate across the departments. So this was a pretty hard, you know, if you have a team of three, coordination is very quick. If you have a team of 11, it becomes much harder. And so the challenge here, the leadership challenge, was for people to connect the dots between the departments and break out of their silos, because you had these departments that formed close bonds and they really did well for their departments, but they didn't necessarily do that well for their company. And when you finally revealed how, you know, all these things fit together, the teams go, if we only had known. Well, all they would have had to do is talk to the person across the table from them and ask them a few very good questions, and they would have been able to do this. So you have these time and communication challenges. And then in addition, this is something that I thought was really great that the professors did, was they said, you know, let's not just worry about the financials. Let's actually bring in the human element, and not in the role play sense that you just seen here earlier, but in the sense that, hey, let's take some direct reports and just give them different skill sets and have a morale there. If you overuse, if you put them on too many projects at once, well, their morale drops. If the morale drops to red, the competitor can hire them away, so you have a highly trained employee that potentially could leave. So you have to balance not just, you know, what are the numbers here and how do I get the latest product out, but how do I balance my human resource component? This simulation is played in the very beginning of the MBA curriculum. It's the first day that the UT MBAs get to experience the entire environment. It's actually played here and downstairs in a big auditorium. For the entire day, students have to make these tough choices, leadership choices. And then, of course, in the middle of their actions, when they finally just gotten the hang of the game, they're releasing their big new product, a really innocent message comes up to the director of R&D, not the vice president, not the CEO, not the CEO. The director of R&D gets a little note, says, hey, there's a little problem with a power supply on this one of our products. Should we release? Gives you a little bit more information. And 2 minutes before the end of the quarter, when you know that if you don't release the product line, you're basically losing the competition, the team has to make, and of course students don't know that this is an ethics simulation. Students think they're here to win. That's the first. And if you know of a future UT MBA, don't tell them. but this is where you have an amazing opportunity to debrief. So the way that the issue is calibrated, about 50% of the teams release and 50% of the teams don't release. That's how we calibrate, or we try to calibrate it, so that you have a real rich discussion around what led a team that has worked together for a day now, and this is happening late in the day, what leads a team that's done that over the day to either do the right thing or not do the right thing. This was based on the real, so the whole simulation was
based actually on a real incident at Dell. Dell was one of the sponsors of this. I think one of the settlement money maybe that they gave to the university. So, you know, but here is where you can really start to teach new students. You know, they've competed fiercely. Half of them made the choice to sacrifice their core, because there are always trade-offs, right? In the classroom, you always know the right thing to do because you always know the right answer and you always know that there are consequences. But when you play it like this, it's very hard to say, you know what, team, I'm CEO, you know, here are my 11 people that have worked all, you know, through the day to compete, and I'm going to pull this product now. You're not going to be able to do the same. Yeah. There's actually multiple versions of this. There's a hurricane, you have to shut down plants, and some people get killed. So we have some fun with this at times. So our company obtained the commercialization rights for this, but the university runs it here every year, and it is the most incredible experience. Like just kind of seeing the students go through it. Actually, before I go to my predictions for the future, any questions? Comments. Anyone had similar types of simulation experiences that they want to share? Yeah.
I work for a company. We do basically we call it a low fidelity simulation for medical students, which is we give them basically paper patients. They have to diagnose. Yeah. We tell them then what features in the case would have helped them make the correct diagnosis if they get it wrong, and then they can basically work through 60 or 70 of these in an hour. A typical course they do 20 or 30.
That's great. Yeah, and on the medical side, I mean, the field is just now beginning in my mind. And again, talking about the last 10 years being kind of wasted and a lot of I think we're in a field that is greenfield still. So many opportunities. Medical is an amazing opportunity for simulations to really have an impact. I saw a really great one, and I don't know the company name either before someone asked, but it was for doctors, and they got emails, and so they had to respond to virtual emergencies on emails. You know, so they set the times when they want to play, and then you know, as they are in their office, they have to like respond to this medical emergency, and just like an email from a real patient comes in, and they have to make choices. So rather than having a simulation where you have like a day in the classroom, you get CME credits by just answering these emails, and you make certain choices in response. A really brilliant way to refresh doctors who have so little time, right? And you just build the simulation into the work stream. I thought it was really clever. Yeah.
With the Texas case study, is that done as part of one actual course? And if so, when within the course period are the students given that?
This was the university basically. This happened all after Enron, and like people said, okay, we need to do this. We need to teach students the right way. This is done before classes start, and it's done for all UTMBA, so all 300 students, which is quite a large number, get together and they play through the simulation over the course of a day. And we're running out of time, and I don't know if I can get this video to work, but it's done at the very beginning. It's the very first thing they do, and it's actually very impactful because precisely they haven't had any, you know, kind of detailed accounting courses, so they think it's all about just business, but it's, you know, and it is. It's about business and finance and strategy and all those things, but there are also ethical challenges embedded. Real quick, my five predictions before we run out of time. This again goes back to the promise of simulations and why I think we are in a really exciting spot for those of us that love simulations. Some of these are kind of boring predictions. I think most of you would agree. Textbooks will be electronic. They will have videos. They will have interactivities, and they will be social. They will all be iPad enabled, and that's, you know, the only question is, who will win? Will it be the textbook publisher, new startups being bought up by textbook publishers? That's the open question, but this is going to happen. The second thing that's going to happen is then that learners will find better explanations of content online than they find in the classroom. See the Khan Academy. You know, how many students are learning right now? How many of you know about the Khan Academy? Most of you know. Students find better explanations because Sal is a brilliant guy than they find with their professors. So students will go there and get their explanations rather than a classroom. And so what professors, what high school teachers, what lecturers in the corporate space have to do is they have to figure out, well, how do I create a classroom environment that engages people? If all the knowledge can be trained online, people can go through and find it on their own. Well, the way to do it is to create a laboratory tutoring environment.
If you're a traditional university, if you're a training provider, you will survive, in my mind, only if you figure out how to build in these types of laboratory tutoring environments into your lectures. And then, of course, to conclude, if you want to stay relevant as a university and you know, as a school district and also as a corporate training departments, you need to figure out how to incorporate games and simulations in order to not make sure this trend leaves you behind. See some of you taking pictures of this. I do have the slides, so come on down. I'm happy to send them to you. We are at the top of the hour. Maybe one time for one question before we leave. Yeah.
Could you just make a broader comment? Like a lot of the talk these days, the hype is around the whole center of game education, right?
Yeah.
You know, corporations don't really take well to gaming content. I would refer to this simulation as well, but can you expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and kind of just going back to the slide, what's a game and what's a simulation? I mean, I think gamification is real. It's here to stay. I don't actually know where the gamification is here. It's real. It's here to stay. It will provide. I mean, I think there are really good applications of gamifications that really work, and I've seen, you know. Companies that have, you know, kind of, if you're like leading a healthy lifestyle and, you know, you put something on your app, right, you get these little badges and, you know, you become healthier that way and the company saves money because they don't have to pay as much, you know, in their insurance, right?
I saw a great example to health and safety, electric utility industry, periodic questions put out to people at particular times of the week, health and safety questions, so it keeps it kind of top of mind.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's great, and I do think there's a huge move towards gamification. I mean, no question, lots of people are doing it. I think it's different from simulations, and I do think if you when we do simulations, we oftentimes don't use the word game, not because what we do as a simulation isn't a game, but because in my mind it goes beyond it. It goes about practicing and creating some intrinsic motivation for learning a particular subject. And that, in my mind, is the difference between games and simulations. And so when we use simulations, we know we're creating a game anyway. We need a competitive environment. We need high scores. All that stuff that players really want and expect in a simulation is there. But we don't talk about it in terms of games and gamifications. Now, some clients, all they want is a game, and they will say, we do a game. You know, so I'm not big into semantic differences, but I do think you have to think about like what are the assumptions. Let's do one more quick question.
Do you have any examples of maybe simulations that you've done for preschoolers? Or what would you do if you wanted to do something
with that? That is another great question. I actually have zero experience in preschool. But I have a one-year-old and a two-year-old now, and so I just downloaded a few of these really cool things for two-year-olds. You go to the Apple iStore, that's actually like a wealth of online kind of little mini simulations that you can use. I'm starting to put my two-year-old in front of some of them, and it's a lot of fun. So I don't have any real expertise, honestly, in that area. But another amazing area where I think simulations will revolutionize learning. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And if you need slides, come on down.